Do you recall the name Nancy Millis? She was an Australian legend in science, especially in the use of GM, genetically modified organisms, crops and the like. She chaired the committee that said yes or no about which GM species should be given a tick and which were likely to be bad news and should be rejected. A major prize is named after Nancy, mainly for women in science. Well, that kind of decisiveness continues as our power over genes gets more and more impressive. And that's what Lee Rollins is talking about today, the ultimate selfish genes that can drive through populations. She's from the University of New South Wales.
Should we manipulate the genomes of other species? The truth is, humans have been actively shaping the genomes of other species for more than 10,000 years. We interbreed and selectively breed species, like our pet Snoodles and the Granny Smith apples that we love to eat, and we don't think twice about it. Some of us eat genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, like canola or soy, but today I want to talk about synthetic gene drive, which is a recent technology that has the ability to affect all of us. I'm not here to argue that this technology is a dangerous idea, but rather the way that we might use it is. When GMOs were first discovered, the dialogue was often centered around irrational fears. Let's be smarter about our approach to this technology, and instead of letting fear lead us, let's let reason guide our opinions. The synthetic gene drive story starts in 2014, when Kevin Esfeldt and his colleagues at Harvard suggested the marriage of two phenomena that occur naturally but independently in nature. The first is selfish DNA, which are genes that bias their own inheritance by replicating copies of themselves across the genome. The second is CRISPR-Cas9, which is a precise gene editing tool. Together, these technologies form gene drive, which drives a gene throughout a population and by extension its associated characteristics to spread to every individual in the population over a short number of generations. This is accomplished because when one parent carries the modified gene, it spreads it to all of its offspring, and they all carry two copies of this modified gene. Traditional genetic modifications and GMOs mostly were developed to help us improve agricultural production. These organisms are likely to be less fit in the wild, so in the event that they escape containment, they may not survive in the wild. In sharp contrast, gene drive is specifically designed to be released into wild populations. And because it copies itself within individuals, it actually eliminates variation and it dodges natural selection. So even if an altered characteristic is disadvantageous to an organism, it can still be driven throughout a population. This is called a modification drive. It artificially drives evolution. There are also suppression drives, which can push a population to extinction, by example, by making all individuals a single sex. This concept has been demonstrated in the lab using organisms with short generation times like mosquitoes, so we know it works. Sounds kind of scary, right? Although gene drive has not yet been released into wild populations, there are several large-scale research projects with this intention. Predator-free New Zealand aims to eradicate pests like possums in New Zealand by 2050, and they're considering the use of this technology. Target Malaria aims to release gene drive in mosquitoes in Africa by 2029. And G-Bird, in collaboration with CSIRO, plans to use gene drive to eliminate mice on islands in Australia and elsewhere. You may be wondering, why would we even consider the use of this technology? Well, if the technical difficulties surrounding the control of the technology can be surmounted, it has the ability to solve some of our greatest problems. For example, malaria kills a child every 2 minutes, and we spend $12 billion a year controlling it. Invasive species threaten biodiversity across the planet, and we spend hundreds of billions of dollars a year on these problems. And Gene Drive has the potential to solve these problems. There are substantial technical challenges that still need to be resolved before we can release this into the wild. But we also need to address a suite of risks before we can responsibly use this technology. One challenge is that all invasive species are native somewhere in the world, and they play important roles in their native ecosystems. Think of possums in New Zealand, for example, in invasive populations spreading tuberculosis to livestock, but at the same time being protected in Australia. So it's imperative that gene drive is adequately controlled. Accidental or intentional release back to the native range must not occur. I'm an invasion biologist. My job is to help produce the science that we use to control invasions. I know that unintentional releases regularly occur. Many introductions that plague us today are not the result of intentional releases. And in Australia, we know all too well the problems associated with invasion. Sometimes, even containment facilities fail to contain, such as in 1995, when CSIRO's containment facility on Wardang Island accidentally released the Khaleesi virus, and many of the rabbit populations on the mainland were infected. Rabbits are pests in Australia, so many people didn't care about this outcome. But this early unintentional release meant that public engagement in this issue never happened. The point I want to make is that this incident happened because of a basic misunderstanding of the biology. Researchers operated under the assumption that Khaleesi virus was spread only by rabbit-to-rabbit contact, and so their facility was designed to prevent this. But as it turns out, flies act as vectors. This gap in knowledge led to the escape of Khaleesi virus, and we may have similar gaps in knowledge about gene drive. Perhaps the greatest hurdle in using this technology is to understand how removing or changing an organism will affect the ecosystem. Ecosystems are complex, and often impacts have chain reactions and are often unanticipated. Let's take cane toads, for example. Toads were introduced to Australia, as many of you know, to eat cane beetles in Queensland sugarcane fields, but instead they powered across Australia. And many native Australian predators are susceptible to toad toxin, and species such as goannas were devastated in their wake. However, goannas' native prey, such as children's pythons, tree snakes, turtle eggs, and crimson finch nestlings, have all benefited from fewer goannas. Toads are a food source for many species of birds who have learnt to flip them over and eat the non-toxic body parts. As a result of toads' presence, black snakes have evolved to have smaller heads, and pythons have fewer tapeworms because toads act as a terminal host for that parasite. These are only a few examples of interactions that we know have occurred, and undoubtedly there have been hundreds more, all in less than 85 years. So now it's difficult to predict what would happen to this ecosystem if toads were removed. In addition to ecological issues, there are also political and security issues. Wild animals don't respect borders. What's good for one country might not be good for another. Clearly, gene drive has the ability to wreak havoc with biosecurity, which is why the US government is the primary funding body for this research worldwide. And this technology could be used to arm bioterrorists with the perfect weapon. A modified organism may look identical to one that isn't modified, and the release of a single individual into a native population could cause major damage. There are also ethical considerations. Do we have the right to eradicate a species for economic reasons? What about for human health gains? Some people would argue that we have a responsibility to take care of each other first. And I don't think many people would mourn the loss of the smallpox virus. I'm here today on behalf of the scientific community to urge you to engage with this issue, because gene drive can affect you too. Let's not fear gene drive, but given its potential impacts, we should all participate in the debate about whether we should use this technology and on what terms. If there's anything here that we should fear, it's complacency. Let's not look back on this as another missed opportunity for public engagement in an issue that has the ability to affect life on this planet. Thank you.
Lee Rollins. She's a Scientia Fellow in Evolution and Ecology Research, University of New South Wales, watching those genes able to drive through wild populations, advising which should be allowed and which suppressed. And aren't you impressed by those smart Australian birds who've learned to turn toxic cane toads over so they avoid the nasty top part? Next week, Martina Stenzel from Germany on nanomedicine and those nanoparticles. I'm Robin Williams.